Corey Jacobs.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. Yeah. We still got the best studio audience in radio. I don't care what anybody says. Well, thanks for joining us here on The Drive Time. And thanks to our guests, Colin Brown and Corey Jacobs, who were here this afternoon for our conversation on racism. We will be having a further conversation on that. You can count on it. Hoping to get these gentlemen back in the studio for more time. Rob Washburn, of course, joining us. He's professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College, still in the studio. And joining us right now for this particular segment, Dr. Stan Blesher. He is a medical doctor, FCCMG fellow of the Canadian College of Medical Geneticists and professor emeritus at Molecular Biology and Genetics and director emeritus School of Human Biology at the University of Guelph. Many of you probably have read the story, but you may not actually, maybe you don't know, some of you, that Dr. Blesher was named the Ontario Senior of the Year, and we are going to welcome him to the studio. And before we do that, though, I thought I'd play this song for him. This is Frank Sinatra's September Song. Here, we'll be right back after this.
When I was a young man courting the girls, I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curls, I'd let the old earth take a couple of whirls while I plied her with tears in lieu of pearls. And as time came around, she came my way. As time came around, she came. When you meet with the young girls early in the spring, you court them in song and rhyme. They answer with words and a clover ring, but if you could examine the goods they bring, they have little to offer but the songs they sing and a plentiful waste of time of day. A plentiful waste of time. Oh, it's a long, long while from December, but the days grow short when you reach September, when the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November, and these precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you.
Frank Sinatra from 1965, September song. I believe that was with the Paul Whiteman Orchestra as well. Congratulations. And of course, joining us in the studio right now is Dr. Stan Bletcher. He's been recognized for his ongoing efforts to advocate for the well-being of Port Hope. The medical geneticist and professor emeritus at the University of Guelph was presented with the Ontario Senior of the Year Award during a recent council meeting in Port Hope. The Ontario Senior of the Year Award program is administered through the Ministry of Citizenship, Immigration, and International Trade, providing municipalities in Ontario with the opportunity to honor outstanding local residents who are at least 65 years of age. Recipients must have made their community a better place to live in one way or the other. And Dr. Bletcher is a vocal and leading opponent against incineration as a means of waste management. This award means, I'm not going to read the quote because we're going to ask the doctor himself. But since joining Port Hope's residents for managing waste responsibly as its medical and scientific advisor, Dr. Bletcher has completed various presentations for government bodies, including local councils and the House of Commons Standing Committee on Environmental and Sustainable Development, about the dangers of incineration. Dr. Bletcher, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Dave, I've got to ask him right away. Can you tell us the story of how you found out you had been successful and being awarded the Ontario Senior of the Year? Can you tell us the story about that?
Well, it came as a total surprise. My wife rigged up a devious plan to get me into the council meeting without telling me why we were going.
We've got to go to council tonight.
Yeah, well, she actually did it in a very elaborate way by making a phone call from our mobile phone to our landline phone while I was still in bed the morning of that day. And the landline phone rang in the bedroom, but then rang only two rings, so I couldn't reach it to take it. And then she came in and said, that was a call from Louise, who's our daughter-in-law and who's a member of council. And so my wife said, Louise says there's something important happening at council this evening, which you'll be very interested in. So we have to go this evening if you don't have any other plans. But she knew perfectly well I had no other plans.
What did you think it was? Did you think there was something?
She said there was something about the environment. So I said, good, we'll go in and see what this is about the environment. And then I still had no idea until Mayor Sanderson mentioned my name, which came as a total shock.
Have you been honored with anything else before?
Well, there was a Port Hope Municipality Award earlier this year for having worked on the environment.
How did you become interested in the environment? I know your background is in medicine and in genetics. How did you get interested in environmental issues?
Oh, the link is very direct. The poisons that come out of incinerators and other sources of pollution are what are known as mutagens, which means it's a substance that can cause a change in the DNA. A change in the DNA is called a mutation. A substance that causes a mutation is a mutagen, and these mutations or changes in the DNA cause cancer. That's how cancer arises. Mm-hmm. So it's a very direct link to medical genetics. It's fundamentally medical genetics that should be informing people on this subject.
But what made you take the next step to becoming an activist, to speaking out? It's one thing to know that, but to be as active as you are.
Oh, well, the fact that shortly after my wife and I moved to Port Hope, an attempt was made to bring an incinerator to our lovely, pristine and rural town, and I was quite outraged at the idea of this being allowed. Mm-hmm. To my horror, the then municipality and mayor supported the idea, and there didn't seem to be very much understanding in general amongst citizens of mm-hmm. quite how serious a problem this potentially was.
Can we talk a bit, if we can, then, about how serious the problem is, Doctor? Because, again, you know, this is an issue that's going to keep popping up. Well, we know that with waste management issues being what they are. We've had the guys on for waste management. We know what the struggle is going to be going down the road in the future. Nobody seems to want to produce less waste. So this is going to come up again. What are the concerns that you had and continue to have, I assume, with regards to incineration?
Incineration is a major source of air pollution. It is so severe and serious a source of pollution, even of so-called particulate pollution, that it can be amongst the major causes. Now, there are a lot of causes. Motor vehicles cause pollution. Factories cause pollution. Incinerators cause pollution. There are other sources of pollution. And people tend to think that incinerators maybe are minor compared to the other sources. One study, for example, in Sweden in 2007 showed that in a middle-sized town in Sweden where there was one incinerator, the incinerator was responsible to up to some 32% of the particulate pollution in that town. That's incredible. Mm. One incinerator, hundreds of thousands of cars, I don't know how many hundreds of factories there were in that town, but that's just a major, major contribution. That's the first point. It is a substantial quantitative cause of pollution. The second and equally as important reason why pollution from incinerators is a cardinal part of the problem is that incinerators produce some poisons, cancer-producing poisons, specifically a group of poisons known as dioxins and mm-hmm. a subgroup called furans, which are very similar, which are basically created by incinerators and almost not by other forms of pollution. So the factory particulate pollution that you get, the motor vehicle pollution that you get, mm-hmm. you don't get dioxins. And dioxin has been described as being the most toxic substance known to humankind.
But these companies that come with these proposals, oftentimes they'll say, we have the technology, we have the ability to control this, we have scrubbers and other tools that they can use to clean the air. Nobody needs to get so worried. Why are you so concerned if that's what they're telling us?
Because what they are telling you is, to use a politically correct and parliamentarily correct term, misinformation. There's another word for it.
Well, I'll say they're lying to us. It's a reality, and I mean, and I would concur with you. I mean, you know, as they say, well, cars produce the same amount of pollution. Well, we're pulling less cars. We have less cars on the road now. We know that we're making people drive less. So we're working on that solution. When it comes to factories, we're working on that as a solution. In Ontario, we stopped producing coal energy. We're working on that as a solution. So if we don't have to burn waste, which we know we don't have to do, we just know it's cheaper, quicker, and easier, then, you know, why would we produce carcinogens, which, if my understanding of what you said is correct, isn't produced in any other way? For me, it's just like it's a no-brainer.
I have two further comments on following up on what you've just said. The first is, yeah, Ontario got rid of coal-fired energy producers. The data are very, very clear that incineration of waste is far more toxic than coal. Mm-hmm. That's the first point. The second point is comparing incineration with other sources of pollution such as cars and vehicles and factories. I've already said that volume-wise, it's comparable. It's not as if it's not comparable. Mm-hmm. But the other important point to bear in mind is, yes, we are doing something about cars, and yes, we are doing something about factories. We'd like to see factories go towards using renewable sources of energy such as solar and similarly with cars. But cars serve a purpose. The economy would grind to a halt if we said no more cars from tomorrow. Similarly, factories serve a purpose. The economy would grind to a halt. We cannot run a country or a world without these facilities. They serve a purpose for society. Incinerators serve no positive purpose at all. The only thing they do is cause cancer.
And on that note, we're going to take our first break. We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Ontario's Senior of the Year, Dr. Stan Bletcher of Port Hope.
Hi, I'm Gwyn Sheltema, co-host with Felicity Signal Reed of Word on the Hills. Do you like books and stories? Are you interested in the world of writing and publishing? Each week on Sunday at 1 p.m., we introduce you to the writing and publishing talent right here in Northumberland. Listen to writers read from their work and get a glimpse into their lives. Join Felicity and me on Sunday at 1 p.m. as we bring you Word on the Hills, right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
We're the radio station that's all about Northumberland. Listen every day for local news, interviews with local newsmakers, music by local artists, and so much more. We are Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest in studio is Dr. Stan Bletcher. He's just been awarded the Ontario Senior of the Year. And, of course, Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Rob, you have a question.
Yes. You were talking earlier about misinformation and the functionality of incineration. Being we need cars, we need factories, but maybe we don't need incineration. Don't these companies that make these proposals, don't they have scientific evidence that shows what they're having claims to? Is that not good science?
The short answer is no.
And why is that?
Why is it that they don't have?
Why is it you say just blanket no, and I'd like an explanation as to why that is. Why are you saying no? What's wrong with what they're proposing and what they're putting forward as their science?
It's false. The claims that they can remove the toxins by so-called scrubbers mm-hmm. are false. They cannot. There's no known mechanism to prevent most of these poisons, and in particular also the so-called nanoparticles, mm-hmm. from escaping. Nanoparticles are particles about the size of a millionth of a pinhead. We've become aware of these as being an important part of particulate matter only in the last 20 to 25 years. Mm-hmm. There's no way known to prevent nanoparticles from escaping from incinerators. They produce them in vast amounts. Nanoparticles enter the human bloodstream. The lung has a filter system to keep out particulate matter. Most particulate matter gets stuck in the lung, so you can get very serious lung disease, but not else diseases, mm-hmm. not other diseases. Nanoparticles, on the other hand, can cause lung diseases, but they also can get through the filter system in the lung and get into the bloodstream. From there, they can go to the heart, and from there to the brain, the kidneys, the liver, and every other part of the human body. Mm-hmm. They carry cancerous poisons with them. So the nanoparticles are carrying the cancerous poisons. The cancerous poisons are also getting into the air and entering our food chain, incidentally, as well. And the food chain is probably certainly a much more important way in which the poisons such as dioxins reach humans and poison us than the other routes such as the air and through skin and so forth. The incinerator companies put out a large amount of very highly sophisticated marketing. They obviously employ very, very skilled advertisers and marketers mm-hmm. and are guilty of putting a lot of false information out and convincing a lot of people of the truth of this misinformation. When we first got involved with this issue, I was quite astonished to see what was being put out. I drew up a list at one stage of this particular incinerator company's 20 most important items of misinformation. Mm-hmm. I had to cut it down to 20. There were many, many more than 20. Okay. And some of them were the most outrageous pieces of misinformation, including total false statements about their track record, total false statements about their ability to filter poisons out and many other things.
If the science is so definitive, then why isn't it that they're even allowed to consider these as alternatives? Why haven't various levels of government just said, look, we're going to ban this type of
technology, like in the way we do with coal fire plants.
I would suggest you get some of these politicians in and have them in this chair and put that question to them. I'm constantly putting that question to the politicians, and I have yet to get a good answer. I do not know. I've been writing to and trying to communicate with the politicians for years. Most recently, I wrote a 30-page document directed to the present Minister of the Environment and Climate Change. This document was completed in the fall, last fall, was submitted to and presented to the Municipal Council of the Municipality of Port Hope in November, beginning of December. The Council approved it and supported it unanimously and sent it on to the Minister. That's now more than 6 months ago. It's more than a half a year ago. I've yet to receive an acknowledgement, even of receipt of it. We were actually in, when I say we, I and the mayor and a couple of other members of the group, including, in fact, Councillor Ferry Blesher and Matt Clayton and I and the mayor, were in to see the minister's senior policy advisor. Just a few weeks ago in Toronto. And he admitted that he had not seen this document, had no idea it existed, and certainly was not ready to make any comment on it, and had no answers to our questions of why incinerators are still being allowed.
Well, there's, you know, you wrote a letter regarding the NTEC REM consideration, and it starts with a wonderful quote: there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. And you mentioned a list of 20 items of misinformation. So I want to quickly go through this as quickly as I can. It's 20 items, so we're going to round them off one after another here. The number one thing on the list: the plant that the company wishes to build in Port Hope would not be an incinerator. Incineration is a dirty word to NTEC REM. When the company proposes to build is a pyrolysis gasification plant, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Number two, the plant would solve Port Hope's garbage disposal problems. Number three, it would prevent the alternative, which is landfill, and it requires no landfill. It would offset the negative environmental impacts of landfills. It would offset emissions of harmful greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide, that come from landfills, but no mention of the dioxins, which are only produced in incinerators. The process results in complete degradation, produces virtually no fly ash. Number five, with respect to nanoparticles, the minute ash particulates, as they refer to them, the jury is still out. Potential health effects are the same as other particulate matter, apparently. And they don't provide any supporting document to say that that's the case, though. Whereas other systems have residual toxic waste, this system produces a clean, non-toxic, inert waste, which is saleable as a commodity in secondary markets. It can be used for paving or in concrete. Number seven, waste is converted to the energy-rich synthetic natural gas, clean syngas, which comprises mainly a water vapor and which gets combusted. Syngas has properties similar to methane. Number eight, the proposed plant would create 35 or more jobs. It would provide energy, 15 megawatts every 24 hours, which will be sold to the grid. This would be green energy. Emissions are within government of Ontario limits. 18 emissions would be released. Of those, only four potentially cancer-producing, and they are at concentrations that are so low that they are protective of a cancer risk level. I don't know what that means. The plant would have no negative impact on tourism. On the contrary, it would attract tourists to see this modern marvel of technology. The company has a strong track record with more than 160 installations in Australia, Europe, and the Far East, first and foremost in Hong Kong. The incinerator to be constructed in Port Hope is tested technology. It is state-of-the-art technology. The process entails recyclable material recovery. So they'll build a recyclable facility as well, I guess. The household and curbside recycling has proved limited, difficult, expensive, and still result in medium to low recovery, with a significant proportion of the materials still ending up in landfills. And the technology is the most sustainable waste solution. That is from the company itself. And the process would provide diversion from composting. Composting has the potential for infectious disease and harmful pathogens to be bred and transferred. So all of the above statements are cited from sources mentioned, but they've not invented any, and every one of these statements is misinformation.
Dave, it's fascinating. You were successful in not
in defeating the Antec-REM bid. But that has not ended your activism. I understand that you are also concerned now about what's going on in Durham and the potential ramifications to here in Northumberland. I'm wondering if you could describe for us what that is.
Well, just to respond to both the points you just made. Yes, the fact that we defeated the attempt to put in an incinerator, defeated the Antec-REM attempt to put an incinerator into Port Hope, does not end the issue in our area for the reason that incinerators are still condoned and allowed in provincial legislation, which means that anyone can still come back and make a new application to put in an incinerator in the municipality of Port Hope or any of our municipalities. And the municipal councils can deny these applications, but then the applicant can make an appeal to the province and put us through the same rigmarole that we went through previously. With respect to the incinerator in Clarington, that's of major concern because the poisons travel hundreds of thousands of kilometers. We're in the direct we are directly downwind from the Clarington incinerator. The wind flows directly westerly towards us and is bringing these poisons to our area. We're inhaling them as we sit here, as we speak. They're all around us. You can't see them. You can't feel them. You don't know that you're being attacked by them, but they're there. These are the facts. And sooner or later, all incinerators fail. This one's already started failing, the Clarington one. They're down at the moment because they exceeded their dioxin limit, which is 60 picograms per cubic meter, by 1,300%.
1,300%?
Yes.
So, oh my
gosh. And they have still not solved that problem, and they're still incredibly arguing that, oh, everything's fine, everything's safe, but there's no problem.
How can they argue that, you know, we're downwind, it's not going to be a problem for us? I mean, you know, as we know, we all live on the same planet, and I hate to bring this up to you listeners, but, I mean, folks in the west coast of Canada are now experiencing the toxic radioactive plume, if you will, from Fukushima.
Absolutely.
So we know that this stuff is going to travel. I mean, if radioactive material can make it to us from Fukushima, Japan, and not be dissipated enough in the air that it won't affect, if you will, air quality, which it is now being noted to do in Vancouver, how can we, who are just a couple of kilometers literally down the road from Clarington, say that, I mean, it's not radiation, thank goodness, but, I mean, it is toxic air. It is toxic waste.
Well, it has in common with radiation that it's mutagenic. It's causing the damage to our DNA and causing cancer. Specifically, with respect to distance these poisons can travel, dioxins have been studied, which were released in Florida, USA, and detected in our Great Lakes, here, Lake Ontario. That's thousands of kilometers. Poisons released in the Sahara Desert in South Africa have been detected in the northern part of England. Poisons released in China have been detected, and as you say now, Fukushima in Japan have been detected on the west coast of North America. There's no stoppage of these poisons. They don't stop at barriers. They don't stop at fences. They don't stop at international borders. They certainly don't stop between Clarington and Port Hope.
Absolutely, yeah.
Have you made any presentations at the county level in regards to your concerns?
I certainly have.
And what was the response that you received?
A less than enthusiastic acceptance of what I was saying.
What did you ask them for?
I asked on behalf of, at the mayor of Port Hope's request, I asked the county council to endorse our request directed to the Minister of the Environment to ban incinerators in Ontario. The county council has so far declined to join in on that.
What was the reason that they gave you?
Again, I wish you'd get the warden.
No, I understand.
Did they give you a reason, or did they just say it lost in the vote?
I don't know whether there was an actual vote taken, not to my knowledge. The reasons that were given included the fact that there is a some kind of environmental assessment in progress, and they do not want to preempt that environmental assessment, which I think is going to take another few years. And the argument has been from time to time, I'm not sure if this was specifically made at the time I made my presentation, but the argument has been made that we've got to keep all our options open, as if it still is a legitimate case to be made that incineration is a legitimate option. There's never been any direct response to my statements, my categorical statements, that incineration can never be safe. I've never had a response to that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, they're hedging their bets. That's kind of like making sure your gun's loaded before you want to commit suicide. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Dr. Stan Bletcher. He is Ontario's Senior of the Year.
They called us slackers and cynics, adrift and apathetic. But you and I know we are much more than that. Join me every Thursday night at 7 p.m. for Deconstructing X, the musical story of a generation. Each week, we'll look at the events that influenced the music of Generation X and how the music influenced events. Deconstructing X, Thursday night at 7 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Summer's here, school's out, and there's lots of free fun to be had at the Mary J. Benson Branch, your public library. Family activity days run Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. with James the Giant Rabbit, Tai Chi lessons, art classes, and the ballerina tea party. Spend a quiet Wednesday afternoon enjoying a movie matinee each week at 1 p.m. Everyone's invited to the library Thursday mornings at 11 a.m. for a family story time and craft. Each week, children can get crafty at the Garden Hill Branch, and on Wednesday afternoons at 2:30 p.m., they can join the Kids Film Club for award-winning shorts by Disney and the NFE. The library launches the TD Summer Reading Club with Incredibrent and Super Sarah Magic Show on August 17th at 11 a.m. For details about programs and other library information, visit us at phpl.ca or call us at 905-885-4712 and find the library on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Missed your favorite program on Northumberland 89.7? Don't worry, you can catch up on news, events, and missed shows on our website at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm Dave Glover, and my guest in studio is Dr. Stan Bletcher. He is a resident of Port Hope. He is Ontario Senior of the Year. And, of course, Rob Washburn joining me in studio for this weekly installment of Consider This. Rob, I know you had a question.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I just want to follow up. When you've been talking to the county, did you at all ask them to address the situation in Durham, in Clarington, and ask them to take any action at all?
It's been included in my comments, the fact that we are downwind from Clarington and that this is a major and ongoing problem that not to my knowledge been addressed.
Okay, I was just curious if what kind of a response you got from county in regards to that proposal to speak up.
Well, I think county would probably have responded if directly confronted with the idea that we're being poisoned from Clarington right now, that it's not a county affair. This is outside of this county, and therefore they can't. And actually, the warden, if I recall correctly, did make a comment to the effect that it's limited what the county, the extent to which the county council can produce results outside of the county borders. Now, that is debatable, I think, because anyone can make their point that this is an issue affecting us in this county and therefore is relevant to us in this county.
So they were relying on this, it's not our jurisdiction argument, is basically
that what you're was, saying. As I understood it, a part of one of the responses that came out.
But you also issued a request, if I remember correctly, that they support the notion that they should ban incinerators across the province.
Oh yes,
so that is within their jurisdiction.
Well, absolutely, and this was in fact the main point of my most recent presentation to the county council. That was exactly the point of the presentation, that I was asking the county formally to support the request to the Ministry of the Environment and the minister to ban incinerators in the province.
If somebody's listening to us right now, what can they do or what steps would you recommend they take in order to, if they're concerned about this or you've raised this issue for them, what can they do next?
Write letters to the Minister of the Environment and letters to their own MPP and councillors, municipal and city councillors.
Now, a lot of times, writing to provincial governments or federal governments seems like a long shot. Oftentimes, we feel more empowered locally. What could somebody do locally? I mean, should we be looking at, as citizens, should we be looking at a ban in Northumberland County at the county level to say incineration is not an option in Northumberland? I mean, is that something doable?
I think it is, and that's something we've also tried to get the county and the municipalities to agree to.
But so far that has not happened.
So far that has not happened.
Okay. But if I was an everyday schmo just sitting back to listening to this tonight, I could write municipal council and I could write my county councillor and say, hey, you know, we don't want this in our area.
Absolutely. I think it would be a great idea for people to write both to municipal and county councillors and the councils themselves.
Now, do you monitor the activities in other areas around us or in other places in regards to this?
I personally don't monitor. My role is to give advice, give medical and scientific advice.
Sure.
I don't consider myself to be an activist.
Oh, that's interesting.
I consider myself to be an advisor to the activists, and I think that's very important to distinguish. I think it's very important that I'm not an activist because I think that would discredit my credibility as a scientist and a doctor.
Well, it would be certainly easier for anyone in opposition to call it into disrepute because they'd be like, oh, well, he's just a crazy activist. I want to talk about a point you raised here because, you know, you made an interesting point when you were being in interview with Todd McEwen, and you said that you remember when cancer was seldom heard and it bore the label rare disease, and that was during your days as a medical student. That was 40 years ago. But here are some cancer facts for the listeners out there. Cancer is the leading cause of death in Canada, and it's responsible for 30% of all deaths in 2015. It was estimated that 196,000 new cases of cancer were diagnosed in Canada and 78,000 Canadians died from cancer. That was in 2015. 100,500 Canadian men were diagnosed with cancer. 41,000 men died from cancer. 96,400 Canadian women were diagnosed with cancer. 37,000 women died of cancer. On average, in this country, 539 Canadians will be diagnosed every single day. On average, 214 Canadians will die from cancer in Canada every single day. So for you to be able to tell us, and again, you know, 40 years ago, and I can't even remember growing up as a kid, cancer was something that was very rare. If somebody you knew got cancer, it was like a major tragedy, man. It was so, so rare. But as you pointed out, and as this sidebar points out, it's pretty damn common in this country now.
Well, here's a little bit more statistics, which I gave to the county council in my last presentation. And that is that in 1991, scientific research articles that I reviewed indicated that at that time, the lifetime expectancy of cancer was estimated to be 1 in 10,000. That's 1991. In 2007, a study published by the United States National Cancer Institute, which is a very prestigious and reliable source, mm-hmm. indicated that the cancer lifetime expectation, remember what I said a moment ago, 1 in 10,000, mm-hmm. is 1 in 2 for men and 1 in 3 for women. And that was 2007. And now we're 2016, it's probably more. It's probably nearer to 3 out of 4 than 1 out of 2 right now. This correlates. Now, this incredible leap from 1 in 10,000 mm-hmm. to 1 in 2 or more correlates with the tremendous leap in pollution that's taken place worldwide. Mm-hmm. And in the same year, 1991, when they estimated the cancer lifetime expectation to be 1 in 10,000, they also estimated that the proportion of cancer cases which were due to pollution was between 1 and 2%. In January of this year, an article written by Wu and collaborators, published in Nature, the most prestigious scientific journal that there is, indicated that the data now suggest that 90% of cancer is caused by pollution. Mm-hmm. I've recently been in communication with the authors of that paper because I'm so fascinated by the significance of this paper. And I wrote and told them, I think this paper is one of the most significant papers of our time because it tells us something extremely important, and that is we have within our power to solve the problem. Solve the pollution problem, we solve the cancer problem.
Mm-hmm. How much of that cancer is directly related to things like pesticides? Is that what you include in pollutants as well?
Oh, sure.
Pesticides as well. Yeah.
Particulate pollution, dioxins, antimony, lead, mercury, chromium, there's a whole string of chemicals, plus radiation pollution. All of these are sources of causing mutation of DNA, causing cancer.
Wow. That, shocking, but sadly, true facts, listeners. And many more, many listeners out there are either living with cancer themselves or are living with someone they know who has cancer. Or it's not two steps removed, and then you have someone in your family or someone in your immediate circle that is living with or suffering from cancer. And so, I have to commend you for the work that you've done over your lifetime. How long did it take you to start to get recognized for some of this work, for people to start to wake up to the reality that what you were talking about was in fact happening?
Oh, I'm still waiting for that to happen.
I'm curious. We've talked a lot about your contribution to the community and things like that, but it'd be nice to get to know a little bit about you. Where are you from originally?
I was born in South Africa, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And how did you happen to end up in Canada?
Long story. I first went to Denmark. I immigrated from South Africa to Denmark. I was very disturbed by the political situation as it developed in South Africa as I was growing up, and everyone knew that it was going to become calamitous at some stage. And so I decided at an early stage that I was going to leave South Africa. The so-called Sharpeville Massacre of 1960 was really the point that triggered me to absolutely decide that was it and I was going to leave. Sharpeville Massacre, where some 70, I think, black people were gunned down in a peaceful demonstration, and unarmed black people demonstrating outside a police station in a little town called Sharpeville were mowed down by machine guns for demonstrating peacefully. And that's the time when I said, I'm leaving. Around about that time, or shortly after, I was sent by South Africa to study on a World Health Organization fellowship in human genetics to study in Copenhagen, Denmark. At the University of Copenhagen in their Human Genetics Institute. And I...
Now, that was a burgeoning field at the time.
It was just beginning to develop. That was the time of the start of human genetics. And so I was so lucky as to be at the leading institute in the world at the time in 1962. I was also so lucky as to meet a stunningly beautiful young Danish girl who's sitting outside there at the moment. And so I went. I had to go back to South Africa. It was the conditions of the World Health Organization fellowship. But then as soon as I had fulfilled those conditions, my wife and I emigrated to Denmark, and I had been offered a job there. And so we lived there for 13 years. Then I decided there were other things to do and other study possibilities. So I started exploring North America, and I looked at several offers of jobs in North American, American, U.S., and Canadian institutions, and decided I far preferred Canada. So that's how I got to come to Canada in 1978.
Now, many of us know our family physician, and we know what surgeons do, and respirologists, and these kinds of specialists. What kind of medicine did you practice? Could you describe it for us, and how did it work?
Medical genetics is, of course, by far the most interesting branch of medicine. And what it entails is I practiced both clinical and research genetics. So in the clinical side, what one's doing is seeing patients with diseases that run in the family because of a change in the DNA. And so the clinical practice involves identifying those diseases, and they can be extremely complex and take a lot of detailed study to be able to distinguish between different forms of the diseases and syndromes, which may resemble each other closely but nevertheless be different. Identify the condition, advise families on the risk of a condition passing from one generation to the other and what the risk is of future children having the disease, then advising on management possibilities and treatment possibilities. Mm-hmm. And now ultimately in this day and age, there are now possibilities for actually changing the DNA back. So if you've got a damaged gene or damaged part of the DNA, mm-hmm. to repair that damage, that's cutting edge research that's going on right now as we speak. But that's the future of medical genetics for sure.
And you've also been involved in various kinds of research. I know some of your work at Guelph, for example, you've done tests for determining offspring. Is that right? You've been involved with that at all, or doing that kind of work at Guelph?
Well, I worked in a lot of different fields.
Yeah.
While I was working at the University of Guelph, I worked on diseases mainly of the of sexual development and of the sex chromosomes. That was mm-hmm. my main special interest.
And that work's also been used in other applications, for example, not just with humans, but also with animals and that kind of...
I worked for a while on tests for determining the... As I said, my interest has been in the genetics of sexual development
mm-hmm.
and of sex chromosomal conditions, and I did work on the... on tests to determine the sex of an embryo before birth. So that's mm-hmm. been one of my interests, yeah.
Wow. Well, it's been a fascinating hour. I'd love to spend more time with you, but we're gonna wrap it up here. I want to thank Dr. Stan Bletcher. He is Ontario's Senior of the Year. He's also a resident of Port Hope, a longtime resident of Port Hope, and I want to thank you for joining us in the studio. You've raised some serious points that people need to look at, and part of our show here at The Drive Time is to try and point people in the direction of things that you maybe, you know, it's very easy in the world of Google to find anything you need to find about. So, Dr. Stan Bletcher, thank you very much for joining us today. Rob Washburn, always a pleasure.
Much. Thank you.
And we're going to take you out with Thomas Dolby. She Blinded Me with Science here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.